Hey everybody, welcome back. This is episode 194. I'm Giancarlo Lino, joined here Chris Martelli, and we got to kick this off with some NBA news today because the Lakers, they got some help again. Another guard coming in. This time it's a return of Dennis Schroeder. He reunites there with the Lakers. He's back with Russell Westbrook, and it looks like they're primed and loaded now with all these guards. Chris, what do you think this signing will mean for the Lakers?
Honestly, man, this is a make-or-break situation for them. They're loading up on point guards for whatever reason. Like, you have Schroeder, you got Beverly, and now you got Westbrook. And I've heard rumors, Alino, that they want to take Westbrook and put him on the bench. Now, I don't know if that's a smart thing to do. I don't know if they just want the poor guy to just look at, you know, Pelinka and be like, I want a buyout option. I don't know what the hell's going on here. But when you have three animated point guards like Schroeder, Beverly, and Westbrook, I think this is only going to result in a complete headache for new head coach Ham. I feel really sorry for the guy, man. I know he even said, I think in May or June, he's like, I'm a big Westbrook believer. I think he could start. I think he could get about 21, 22 points a game. But now with getting Beverly and Schroeder, that's going to eat at his minutes. I don't see Westbrook really – maybe he'll still get maybe 16 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, something like that. But he's not going to be performing at that elite level anymore. Now, I don't know if they just foresee that for the guy. I don't know if something in the locker room snapped. But I don't like this move at all, honestly, man. Like, I'm a full believer in Russ still. I think he could have at least another one or two really solid years. And it seems like this Lakers team, man, getting Beverly and Schroeder, it feels like they just want to give him the short end of the stick and kind of kick him out of town. What do you think about that? Because to me, this kind of hints at a Russell Westbrook exit.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, when I saw, like, they want him to be, like, the second unit guy and be on the bench and be the spark plug, like, that's a very expensive second-term kind of guy there, like, you really want him to be the backup for Beverly? I don't think that's a nice fit, even having them both on the same team. I think they're eventually going to end up fighting in practice. And Westbrook is not the one I think you would want to leave off that team if you're looking to win a championship. I think Westbrook is a better scorer than Beverly. He's more proven. I think if Westbrook was on a team like the Clippers, I think he'd be a lot better fit. I just don't think he meshes well with the Lakers, and this is showing right now. So I think Schroeder comes in and gives them options because they're probably still actively looking at what they could do with Westbrook, whether they can trade him and get some value for him, or they're just probably just going to have to buy him out and work out like a finance buyout so they can have some cap leverage. But I think this is just leading towards a disaster. I don't see Westbrook working well with all these guys and all their egos getting on the same page.
Yeah, as well, man, you're looking at kind of who they lost this offseason. They lost Horton Tucker, which to me is like that could either be a big problem in the future or it could be, you know, a move where you acquire a piece to win a chip. But you look at their backcourt, man. Like, I know LeBron can play point guard. He's probably going to play it at times. But who do you foresee, man, playing that number two? Do you see it being Patrick Beverly? They go small up at point guard, shooting guard? Or do you maybe give it to a guy like Malik Monk, who we saw last year? He looked pretty damn solid. Even, dude, I hate to say this, Austin, what was that guy's name? The white dude on the team coming off the bench. That guy was pretty good, too. He was not too shabby. So, like, they lost Carmelo Anthony. Anthony Davis, we all know he doesn't like playing at the five. He likes playing at the four. So, you know, you add Thomas Bryant, so he's probably going to be their starting center. He has injury problems. AD has injury problems. LeBron's 38 years old now. Like, what do you foresee this Lakers team doing this season? Because with all these acquisitions, a lot of the analysts are saying, yeah, they're going to be top five, no doubt about it. I don't know, man. You look at the Western Conference, it's looking a lot more challenging than maybe Pelinka thinks it is.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do not see this like season even going well. I wouldn't even be surprised if at one point we see LeBron say there's going to be a trade rumor around him, maybe go to like New York or something, and they're going to work out a great PR plan for him, but I do not see this season going smoothly. I could be wrong, but AD has shown time and time again, you can't rely on him for a full 82-game season. He's a great player, but he's way too injury prone. And at this stage of what the Lakers are doing, he should have been the focal point by now. And they're still talking about ways to surround him and lighten the workload off him, which already tells you is not going to be a solid year for the Lakers, because who's going to play that five position? They had Dwight Howard, and now you can't even bring him back because of their salary cap, and Carmelo Anthony were nice fits, but this is going to look like a little similar than this year. I think they're going to be on the outside looking in.
Yeah, man. And a lot of people underestimate, you know, Minnesota moving forward, Memphis. There's a lot of teams that were not in the playoffs regularly that are going to be there now. And you even look at the Clippers, they get John Wall, who's definitely going to be rejuvenated, motivated, playing with guys like George and Kawhi also coming back. Denver's going to be top to bottom, I think, healthy to start the year. The West, man, is not easy. And I think Pelinka, he's going to start to realize that maybe come November, December. And, dude, I hate to say it, if AD is not going to be your focal point by maybe December, January, then this team is probably, again, like last year, we're going to see a collapse. So I don't know. I'm a big Laker fan. I always have been. Kobe guy through and through. But this team, man, I don't like the chemistry building here. And especially losing one of LeBron's best friends in Carmelo Anthony, where you easily could have re-signed the guy. Like, these are moves that are going to definitely bite them in the ass, I think, as the season just continues to go on.
Do you think Carmelo Anthony goes to, like, Denver? Or I think he's still going to be looking at options to come in as a mid-level exemption and make a run?
I think he really wants to go to a team where he has been before. I've heard Knicks. I've heard Nuggets. I've also, believe it or not, Alino, I've heard the Atlanta Hawks. If he can be a guy off the bench, averaging about 13 points per game, maybe, you know, the coach gives him 22 to 25 minutes. I think Carmelo understands that he is not a starter anymore in the league. He's a flash in the pan type of scorer. He's a guy like, I want to say, I don't know, he could be a guy like a Norman Powell, maybe a tier under that. He can, or, you know, I'm sorry, not Powell, a Terrence Ross. He could go out on the floor, get you a quick 13 to 15 points, and help your team come back from maybe 8-0 runs. He's a very underrated player, at least now in his career. So I think if Atlanta wants to improve a little more, why not go get a 17, 18-year vet in Carmelo Anthony?
You think the Raptors could be an option? Because Masai, they have the connection from Denver. The Raptors could use someone like that off the bench with Scottie Barnes and OG. Do you think that would be a good fit for him on Toronto?
Oh, absolutely, man. And I'm telling you right now, I would be the first guy to go to Champs and get that jersey. I'm a huge Carmelo fan, man. I've loved that guy since his rookie year. I'll say it depends on how much Masai and Nick Nurse really rely on the guy they just drafted, Chris Boucher, as the season goes on, because we have seen that they have kind of favored Precious over Boucher, I think, for the long run. But if you get Carmelo Anthony, he could play the four. You put Siakam at the five. I think that could also be deadly, man. And again, like you mentioned, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, we should have gone out, got Vince Carter, be that momentum guy. I think Carmelo could do the same thing here in Toronto.
I like it. And even going on, we got to touch on this because hockey's buzzing now. Season's about to start soon, the preseason, rookie camp's underway. And Montreal decided, let's get our fan base going by announcing our new captain. And they announced that a youngster and Nick Suzuki is going to be having the C on his jersey, taking over from Weber, who was a respected captain in the league. And already there's issues with people criticizing them that Nick Suzuki doesn't speak French. Is this like a thing of the past? Like, do they need to get over it? Like, it's a captain of the team and go on.
I mean, it is a culture in Montreal. It always will be. You know, you look at the greats back, Guy Lafleur, Béliveau, a lot of French-dominated greats there in Montreal. But this guy is not French. Again, he was drafted by Vegas, gets traded for another French, you know, Max Pacioretty. I just think you, the fan base, I was saying to you before the pod went live, between Toronto and Montreal, we do have a very passionate fan base, and they don't want to get away from the culture. I get that. Dude, I've been hearing for years that Montreal fans, oh, we should make Brendan Gallagher captain because, you know, his name kind of sounds French and he's been with the team for 10 years. But you're looking at an up-and-coming stud here in Nick Suzuki, man, a 200-foot game that you can't pass up. He's been compared to Bergeron. So Nick Suzuki, man, I said to you before the pod as well, yeah, he's going to be one of the youngest captains in Montreal Canadiens history. That's a lot of pressure. But if there's one guy on this team that I'm looking at right now that I think he can definitely overcome the pressure and just be an outstanding leader and score, I think it's Nick Suzuki, man. And I don't want to say he's going to be in the rafters. You know, that's a lot of pressure to come in. I think he's 23 or 24, but I really like this move for Montreal. They signed him to an extension. I think it was last year or 2 years ago. I think he's getting about $7.5 million. This could be a really good contract or a really bad contract. And this is all up to you guys in Montreal. If you guys put all the pressure on him, it could crumble quick. But if you guys stay, you know, passive, I think Nick Suzuki could be a stud.
Yeah, I like Suzuki. Ever since Vegas got him, I thought that was a guy that low-key was a move that was going to help them win a cup. And then they traded him, obviously, because they didn't want to pass up that opportunity. But I think Montreal has something with him. And it's all going to come down to, like, all the pressure. Like, he's still young right now, and putting a captaincy on a team like Montreal in that market could be overwhelming. But he's been there already. It's like he's coming into it like Monahan, where they could have just made him the captain as a nice little transitional. Yeah, so I think they have Suzuki, but it's all going to come down to pressure. And if he's able to – I guess already the room respects him because, like, so far the couple years he's been there, he seems to have a good relationship with the players, or they wouldn't have made him captain. But I think if they put too much pressure on him, and looking at this nice picture, they already got the nice PR out there.
Yeah,
it could work. I have high hopes for Suzuki there.
Yeah, as well, man, you got to bring up this dynamic duo all of a sudden now that everybody loves in Suzuki and Caulfield. We saw last year. I mean, what? In October, Caulfield was looking like a disaster. He wasn't scoring. He wasn't gelling. And then, of course, his favorite player becomes his coach in Martin St. Louis. And that's obviously going to bolster his offense, his confidence, yada, yada, yada. And then you have Nick Suzuki, man. He's low-key been in the league already for 4.5 years. So this is a guy that he's honed his craft. He's improved his leadership. He's improved his offensive ability. And Cole Caulfield, call me crazy, Alino, could get 35 goals this year. So yeah. I really like this dynamic duo that they're building. They just drafted another goal-scoring monster who can look like he could potentially be a Line A type player in Juraj Slafkovský. So I think right now, like you mentioned, we both mentioned perfectly, I think it's all up to the Montreal fan base, how much pressure they want to put on these young guys. If they want to put the pressure on early, and maybe they're going to use that as, hey, you know, we're going to give you guys some pressure so you guys could perform. But we've seen it, Alino, where some fan bases, they put the pressure on and the youngsters just can't get it done. It gets in their head. It gets at their confidence. But I'm really confident in Suzuki. I think he's going to be a fantastic player. I'm also very confident in Caulfield and Slafkovský. So coming from a Leaf fan, I mean, it's going to be a fun rival year for years to come. But Montreal, I believe, is in a strong place right now.
And where do you think some other guys like Slafkovský, do you think right away he'll make an impact and he'll be a part of that leadership group? Or do you think it'll take like maybe 2-3 years before he lives up to that number one overall pick?
I mean, the leadership group, I'll say a couple of years for sure. I still think he has to improve on his English, but we've seen at the draft, he's a very charismatic guy. He's a very likable guy, which is always a great start to becoming a letter on your team, an A, a C. I think, Alino, call me crazy, I like this comparison that I'm going to give you. I could either see him being like a Lafreniere, where the first couple of years, the stats don't look too good. But we've seen, even at last postseason, Lafreniere was playing fairly well. He was actually looking like a leader on the team, finishing his checks, you know, getting into scrums if he had to. I think Slafkovský could be that type of player where You look at the stats the first couple years, maybe the Montreal fans don't like it as much, but I think in the long run, he could be a problem. Or Alino on the other side of the spectrum, I could see him being like a Line A, immediately coming in, getting about 25 to 32 goals in his first year. So regardless of the fact, I think Slavkovsky's going to be a hell of a talent, first overall for a reason. I know the name, it looks like it has bust potential, but I like Slavkovsky. I think he's a big body in a smaller era, but he's going to use it to his advantage and score goals.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I was sold on him when he was drafted first overall, caught a lot of people by surprise. I looked at him just go up and how charismatic he was, just took his jacket off and handed it off to Gary like he was a valet, oh, yeah. Like he was Macho Man giving his robe to Miss Elizabeth in the old school WWE days. So good for Slavkovsky. He's a character. But speaking of Canadian teams that are going to have a fan base that's not too happy, Winnipeg decided, yeah, let's get in on this. We won't have a captain this season, so it pissed a lot of people off because their captain is beloved there. What did you think of this whole mess there in Winnipeg?
I mean, shout out to Rick Bowness. I think this was his move for sure. He's just that very strict type of head coach. Cheval Dayoff, he's done a tremendous job with Winnipeg over the years. Remember when they came in as that extra team in 2011, the first guy that put on that jersey was Mark Scheifele. I think you should probably make him your captain now that you're stripping everybody. But we saw at the end of last season, Alino, Scheifele was in trade rumors. So, I mean, if this is a ploy to keep Pierre-Luc Dubois with Winnipeg, so be it. You can make him the captain. I like Kyle Connor as well. I think he could be a guy. He came up, I think, a 46-goal season. He could be a great captain. But this, to me, Alino, I don't know if you remember. Remember when they stripped Patrick Marleau, the Sharks of the Sea? To me, this is a very similar ordeal where, you know, Blake Wheeler's 36, 37 now. Maybe they just want to change up the culture, have a little culture shock. You maybe have Blake Wheeler. Obviously, he's going to be an A this season. Maybe I want to say Alino by December, January. I know they said they're not going to have a captain this season. I don't know if I firmly believe that. I think they do have the leadership group to announce a captain immediately. So you have Scheifele as an option. You have Kyle Connor as an option. If you want to keep Pierre-Luc Dubois, you have him as an option. I think it's going to be a little drama fest in Winnipeg. Rick Bowness, though, is a guy that can contain the room, no doubt about it. So I like this move for Winnipeg if you're looking for the culture change. I think you have to make Mark Scheifele the captain, but anything is possible. Alino, who do you think is the next captain of Winnipeg?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they should have done the Marlo Thornton approach here. Like, if you're going to name or if you're going to remove a captaincy, you should have already like immediately said, okay, Scheifele's our guy right now. He's not getting traded. Put all those rumors to rest and your fan base would have been a lot happier. But the way that they did it, where they're saying they're not going to have a captain, where there's clearly a locker room of guys that have been there for a long time that have been a part of this leadership group for a long time. It just doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't really show you have confidence in your own group if you're the coach. So I think they should have named Scheifele. And I just think now this is a message that maybe Scheifele and Wheeler could be on the way out, that they're looking at trades and maybe going younger on the back end and getting some other pieces because they've had some trouble of signing guys and keeping their players and they've been forced to make a lot of changes. So I'm not too confident if I'm a Winnipeg Jets fan.
Yeah, man, even as well, you're looking at Pierre-Luc Dubois. I think he's another option if, for say, Scheifele and Wheeler are traded. We got to remember, Alino, he signed a one-year deal, Dubois. So can you imagine you're Dubois' agent and you're lining up for a contract extension and you have that ability to literally go up to Winnipeg and say, listen, I will sign an eight-year, let's say $8 million contract if you make me the C. So, like, there's so many – I think there's just so many inevitabilities here. Like, you have Scheifele, Wheeler, who could be on the way out. You have Kyle Connor, who could potentially be the captain. Nikolai Ehlers is another option where he's been there for 6-7 years. Pierre-Luc Dubois comes to the team, and it's like, hey, I'm younger than all these guys. Why don't you make me the captain? So, like I said, man, I think this is going to be – it's a team in the NHL that has not had a lot of attention brought to them. I remember the last time they had this much attention, Alino, was when Dustin Byfuglien was going to training camp 25 pounds overweight. So it's good to see Winnipeg have this attention. I do think at the end of the day, it should be Mark Scheifele. But like we've said, man, if they want to go with a whole different approach here, you trade Wheeler Scheifele at the deadline. I don't even know what to believe anymore with Winnipeg. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. Me and you are just going to have to sit here and be a part of it.
Just all the drama that they're going to have is... I remember when Evander Kane was there and they all had that drama where the dressing room would just hate his guts and the whole thing with the sweatpants and his sweat tracksuit and everything they threw in the shower. And that was on like mainstream news all the time. Like that was a big headline. And I don't know. I just think that this is going to be something where your veterans that have been there so long are just going to turn on the new coach. Like all these guys are like Paul Maurice guys kind of, cause they've been there with him for the beginning. And then after you have this new coach come in, his new philosophy, this could be a way of saying the coach is telling the GM, these are the guys I want to go with, and I'm going to take the captaincy to piss this guy off so he demands a trade and I get someone who I want in return. So I think it's just all Shovel Day Off and Bones, and they're all just going to go at it this year. It's going to be a fun drama show for everyone outside of Winnipeg, except for the ones living there.
I could already see the press conference with Shovel Day Off just avoiding so many questions, man. It's going to be like, yeah, so what did you think about Kyle Connor's like body language? Next question. Next question. Like, it's just, I can't wait for Winnipeg because, dude, we also forget, like, Edmonton and Calgary get all the attention, and then there's Winnipeg and Vancouver that get nothing. So seeing Winnipeg get some attention, it's going to, I think, make the NHL season a little more fun.
Even on that topic of the NHL, like, Winnipeg, it could be a smart thing. I'm with you. Like, you see teams like Edmonton and Calgary right now with all the moves they made in the headlines. Toronto, obviously, they're going to get all the headlines because of their ownership group. And Montreal, Ottawa, not so much unless they make a big deal. And this could be Winnipeg's way of getting their own attention. Start some shit in the dressing room and it leaks out. Everyone starts talking about your team, gets it trending, and then you make your move. So I'm with you. Could be something positive. But the Leafs, Austin Matthews celebrated his 25th birthday, which is crazy that he's already 25. But what are your projections for him? Because I see a lot of people saying he won't hit 60. He'll get maybe just 50 this year. Some say 55. And Martin will get 40. What are your projections for Austin Matthews?
If there's a trend, Alino, that we've seen last year, I mean, the scoring was up to an absurd rate last year. I don't know if they're going to make a couple rule changes, but for me, I think 57 is like the lowest total. If the scoring is going to be up like it was last year, how can he not hit 60? He's the best goal scorer in the league. He's a guy that is probably one of the best in-slot wrist shot scorers I've ever seen in my life. I've told you numerous times, man, this is a guy at even strength that just makes it look so easy. So I don't know, some fans saying 50, but I feel like that's a little bit of an insult. The guy has, since coming in the league, 40 is like where it started. He didn't even start at 30. He started at 40 goals. So I got to say for now, I mean, I'm full on that hype train. I'm going to take 60 goals this year again. I think he's going to be the first goal scorer, man, in history to get back-to-back 60-goal seasons. Let's get it for Austin Matthews, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm like, when I saw that, some people saying 50 goals only, I'm like, that's kind of disrespectful. This is a guy who is struggling, and he still hit 50. Like, in 2 years that, even with the pandemic, where it was a shortened year, he was on a crazy pace if it was a full 82-game season. So I'm going to go above that. This might be me just adding more pressure, but screw it. I think 70 goals. 70. He'll be the first guy. He's going to hit 70 this year. I think he had a rough patch where I think there was like 5 or 6 games where he didn't really get anything going on the power play. I think this year they're going to correct that. They'll put him with Marner all year. I think Mitchie takes a little bit of a decline with the goal scoring. He gets more assists, and I think Austin Matthews is going to get 70.
Dude, honestly, that is a hot take. I do think, I'll tell you right now, I think the highest he can get is 64, like 64 to 65 for me. That's what I'll say. But you said it perfectly there. Like, he had a streak last year where I think he didn't score for 9 games, but then he'll go on a streak, Aldino, where he'll score 12-6. So it's like, you don't know with Matthews. Like, this is a guy that he's obviously consistent, but there are times when he's streaky, he makes up for it when he goes on torrid paces. So, I mean, there are guys in the league, no doubt about it, that are going to be hungry to win the Rocket. Like, I think McDavid could take a step in terms of goal scoring this year. I think David Pastrnak has something to prove. He's going to be a UFA at the end of the year. I think he wants to get what Panarin gets. So maybe he gets 50-plus. Kyle Connor's another guy. But Matthews, out of all of the men, I think is the guy that's going to lead the way. And here's another thing I'll say to you, Alino. We're talking about Austin Matthews. Let's talk about the OG goal scorer, Alex Ovechkin. The guy's coming off 50 goals at 35 years old. Do you see him getting 50 again, or do you think that's out of reach for him? Or do you think he just beats Father Time every time?
Yeah, I think 50's a realistic target, like 50 right on. I think with the teammates around him, like Mantha, I think needs to step up a lot. I thought that was a perfect fit when they made that trade, him for Vrana and just that whole package together. But if Mantha steps up, I think maybe Ovechkin doesn't have to have so much pressure and he'll be a little bit more free to go around, even though he's going to draw some guys. But I think Mantha is going to create some space, and I think Ovi does get 50. If not, I do see him getting close to it. So it's not going to be a crazy decline where that 1 year he got like 35 and everyone was talking about him and Kessel because they were struggling being past it at that age. So I think we'll see Ovi get close to 50 this year.
I was going to ask you too, man. Like, who do you think has more pressure going into the year, Patrick Kane or Jack Eichel?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think Kane has some pressure just because I think he's campaigning there to other teams to show, please take a chance on me when I get the hell out of here. So I think Kane's going to put pressure on himself because I think he's tired of just the management over there. I think it's been brewing for a few years, I want to say, since Quenneville left. I think that's what started it, where it's like, you know what? I think I'm done with my time here. I think Keith was the first one to just dip. Seabrook took the retirement package. Marian Hossa took the retirement package. And just Taves, I don't know. Taves is stubborn. Good for him. He's loyal to a fault, but I think he should get the hell out of there too. And Kane needs to dip. So Eichel, I think the neck injury, the surgery, well, they'll cut him some slack in Vegas for a full year, but I think Kane's got some pressure to get the hell out of Chicago.
There you go. I like that. I like that a lot. I could see him going to Florida. I could see him going to Edmonton. I just think Patrick Kane, man, as long as he's been in the league, he's been producing. So I think those type of guys will always have the pressure. Even Crosby, I still see some guys saying, oh, if Crosby doesn't get 80 points, he's washed. It's like, man, the guy's 35 years old. He can't be putting up 110 every single year. So when you're a generational guy like Kane and Crosby and, you know, Ovi, and even Jack Eichel was supposed to be generational, like, these guys always are going to have the pressure. But make no mistake about it, going back to Austin Matthews, he's probably got the most pressure out of any other player other than McDavid. I'll say Matthews has the most pressure this season.
I'm with you. And I guess our final topic here we'll go into. This whole thing that we're talking about today, our whole pod is about a ruckus and a drama show and every single team in the league and NHL, NBA. So WWE decided, let's ramp it up and get everybody to just talk about this. So Crown Jewel, they go to Saudi Arabia every year a couple times. They pay a shitload of money. $50 million per show, and WWE's going to get them their money's worth because they're bringing Roman Reigns defending the title against Logan Paul in the main event. That's what they're going to get. So I'll ask you this. When you first heard about this match, was it smart on WWE's part, or is this something where they should have thought of other matches here?
I'm going to start with this topic, Alito, by saying at least it's not Goldberg. I mean, we've seen Logan Paul in two matches, and he's been fairly great, honestly. Like, the spot he did at SummerSlam with The Miz, I thought that was phenomenal with the frog splash on the announce table. He's got that potential, man. He's a very athletic young kid. Roman Reigns is a guy that's been doing it at an elite elite level for the last 2 years. Why not, man? It's going to get you marketability. It's going to get that clout. Like, again, WWE has to compete with boxing. They got to compete with, again, Canelo last night. That was a great performance. They got UFC. They got AEW. They actually got a lot more competition than a lot of wrestling fans believe it or not. So with a name like Logan Paul, who has 25 million subscribers on his socials, Roman Reigns being the face of WWE, shout out to Roman Reigns being ranked number one on PWI. Good for him. Well-deserved. I just think this match, Alino, call me crazy, it is a risk, but at the end of the day, I think this is going to be an absolute gem of a match. I think Logan Paul, he has it in him. Roman Reigns is going to be well-rested. He's not going to be at extreme rules. Saudi show, obviously, sometimes we've seen in the past, it's been a train wreck. But I think in this case, just the way that both of these guys have been kind of on a hot streak, I think it's going to be good for WWE.
I'm with you. I think this is a perfect event to do this sort of thing. If it was at like Extreme Rules or Survivor Series, I don't think people would have took to it too well. Like, this has nothing to do really with any of the storylines right now. Like the Crown Jewel event, they ramp it up like a week or two before. So this is a good way to build it up. Roman's not going to be on TV for a while, so it helps him. And you can get your social media following up for that event. So I think it makes it like a big event type of feel. I think Brock Lesnar is going to be a part of it too. So they're going to get that Legends kind of deal involved with it. And maybe Goldberg, who knows. But I think for sure they're going to have a lot of guys on this for a big payday. I just think that we're finally seeing Roman in a, not a character, but where he doesn't seem rehearsed too much. And just on the fly, like I think he was talking about Logan Paul being the third match. He can do it any event he wants for the rest of his career. He'll be happy. So these little digs at him and playing to the crowd, I think, is a perfect way or perfect improvement on Roman's part as a heel.
The only thing, Alino, that I'll say that might backfire for this promo and feud, I think, is just Roman Reigns has been so over. I want to say since that promo with Austin Theory, do you remember when Vince got released and he's like, I'm your dad, or I could be your daddy now. And I feel like Roman Reigns in this case with Logan Paul is going to be the face. He's going to get cheered more than Logan is. So I don't know if they want to kind of tease a Roman Reigns face turn. I don't think this is a point in his reign where I don't care what he is. As long as he's this character, and he's going out there like once every month, putting on a great pay-per-view match. Why the hell not, right? Like even look at Brock Lesnar's cowboy character. Was he really an organic babyface? No, he was more that badass that would come in and beat the shit out of the bad guy. But in this case, a lot of wrestling fans, they don't like Logan Paul coming on the scene with his 25 million subscribers, getting handed everything. So I think regardless, man, they might be putting themselves in a corner, but at the end of the day, like I mentioned, Logan Paul has been on fire. He's put on two great WWE wrestling performances. Roman Reigns, I feel like, hasn't had a bad match in a long time. So I'm invested in both guys. I'm intrigued on one side with how Logan's going to do, and I'm intrigued with how Roman's going to treat Logan here. So at the end of the day, I think this is just a benchmark to maybe have, like, it's just going to wait for Cody Rhodes to come back and have Cody face maybe Roman, but this is an interesting point where I have to ask you, Alino. You mentioned to me a couple days ago, you think maybe Theory cashes in here. What approach do you think WWE's going to go in? Do you see Theory cashing in? Do you see Logan Paul winning? Do you see them waiting for Seth or Cody? There's just so many options. I'm intrigued with all of it.
Yeah, this is what I think is going to happen here. At this press conference, Roman's holding the WWE title here. And I think this is going to be Paul Heyman's way of, you know, working Logan Paul, saying that look how naive this guy is. He just signs a contract for the money, thinking that he's getting a universal title match. Meanwhile, the whole time it was just for the WWE title. And I think this is Austin Theory is going to lurk in, make it a triple threat at some point when both guys are down and out. And he's going to pin Logan Paul. And then all the headlines are going to say Austin Theory pins Logan Paul to be the new WWE champion. And then Roman pulls a swerve that he's still the Universal champion for 800 and whatever day that it is at that point.
I actually like that. I like that a lot because you do, like, again, it's the little details. You look at the picture, you don't see the blue belt. Obviously, the blue belt would freaking stand out more than the WWE title, but hey, you don't see it there. That is a good point. I think, regardless of the fact, Austin Theory being a champion is not bad for business, man. He has a lot of contenders that hate him. He's got a lot of programs that he can go in. So, again, I want to say, dude, when he won Money in the Bank, I think I told you I didn't like it at first, but he's kind of grown on me a bit as that really sour heel, like Seth Rollins was back in 2015. So, regardless, I think they have a gem here.
Yeah, I'm with you. And just speaking of Crown Jewel, I was just looking at some of the chatter about it. If Brock Lesnar faces Bobby Lashley and they go in that direction, until like whatever happens with Seth Rollins and Lashley, it looks like Lashley's going to still be champ. Do you think it would be something different, like, or downplay Lesnar if he goes in and challenges for the US title?
I mean, for sure it's different. You could definitely build that for. I was going to say to you, if you're going to try and do a match like that, you maybe have Brock stay the course, maybe stay on SmackDown and go after Gunther. I think that would be amazing. Or again, you have Sheamus by maybe before SummerSlam, he beats Gunther for the title. And then you have Sheamus versus Lesnar. I think that would be another dream match that no one's really had. Very hard hitting. Both guys have done it all in WWE. But again, going back to your point, I think that would be a big swerve, not only for fans like ourselves, but to the people that really don't know Brock Lesnar. Like, let's say you're 8, 9 years old, and it's like, oh, you know, Brock Lesnar, the dad's telling him, yeah, he's been in the main event for the last 25 years. Now he's going for a mid-card title. You just never thought you would hear that. So if they start doing that moving forward, Al, you know, like you have guys like Lesnar, you have guys like Sheamus, you have guys like Seth Rollins going for these mid-card titles, it only benefits the company. Now, again, I'm a big Seth Rollins fan. I could say to you know, screw WWE for booking Rollins in this program against, let's say, I don't know, let's say Finn Balor down the line for the US title. That sounds amazing. But again, both guys deserve better than the US title. But if you start those programs little by little, the title is going to gain more traction. It's going to gain more relevance. And then the Intercontinental and the US title, all of a sudden, Alino, they're going to be on pay-per-views every month. So that's going to be fun too. So I do like that approach. I think they definitely have to do that because for years, man, Vince McMahon, love the guy. He didn't bring any credibility to both those titles.
Yeah, I'm with you. Can you imagine just Gunther versus Lesnar?
Holy shit.
Even throw Lashley in the mix. Like, and if it's Lesnar versus Sheamus and they go in the other direction of the Hurt Business versus Imperium, they're just
Holy
hard
shit.
hitting. These are the type of matches you want Big E on commentary for. Like, he
Oh,
would,
yeah.
those are the ones he loves. He doesn't like the little spot fest super kick matches. Like, these big monsters just throwing each other around the ring. Just
Dude, even
going
he's
at it.
coming back soon, Big E. Like, even Big E can maybe go up against Lashley down the line, too, because they had that program. There's so many potential feuds moving forward, man. I'm excited. I think, but like you said, like these guys go all going for US and IC titles. It only benefits, and it even makes the WWE and the Universal title even more important. So I think at the end of the day, we said it time and time again, Alina. Look at all the belts in AEW. Look at all the guys in AEW. It's the same thing in WWE. There's not a lot of belts in WWE. There's what? Like six? Like, there's not a lot for the men. So when you hold a belt, it should be a big deal. Like, look back in the day, Alino. Nakamura with the Intercontinental title did not defend it. You look at Dean Ambrose with the US title, didn't defend it. There's just so many, even like, who was the other guy there? Rusev with Rusev Day, having the United States title, didn't defend it. So it's like, what the hell's the point of having these guys win these belts for what? A resume? Is that it? Like, so I really agree with you there. I think at the end of the day, you have to pull the trigger with Lesnar. I know it sounds funny at first, but I think it's only going to benefit the company. Now, I don't know if Lesnar's going to like that. Because we all know he needs his private jet and being in the main event. But hey, you know what? Maybe we've seen a little more of a humble Lesnar. We'll see.
It's the Canadian in him, living in Saskatchewan. Good Canadian boy, good Canadian farmer. Just we'll give him more money to be in the mid card, give him some more at a farm. I think he'll be loving that one. But this has been a fun episode. We touched on hockey, the captaincy changes, the Lakers disaster of a dressing room, still looking to improve that. And WWE is just surprising again by having a crown jewel with a YouTuber, now new WWE superstar, and their top superstar of the last decade. But Chris, this was fun. This is In the Zone, signing up.
Peace.